It's Wednesday, 17th of December, 2014. This is HPR episode 1663, entitled Interview with Greg Greenlee, founder of Blacks in Technology, and is part of the series Interviews. It is hosted by Ken Fallon and is about 62 minutes long. Feedback can be sent to ken@fallon.i or by leaving a comment on this episode. The summary is, Blacks in Technology is a tech-focused community focused on increasing diversity in technology.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Now, some of you may have known that we've been represented at HogCamp over the last few years, and I've always found it a really cool place to go. It's a great festival, lots of very interesting people there, and what always struck me was the amount of diversity, both in the across genders and across various different other boundaries. But there was a little bit of controversy, I think, this year, in that one person started, not one person, but it was brought to the attention of people via Twitter stream that it maybe wasn't as diverse as it could have been. So I was thinking about that, and it came to my attention that, yeah, maybe we could do a little bit more to encourage more hackers to come out of the woodwork. And with that in mind, I was doing some Googling and come across Greg's podcast. So, Greg, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Ken. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Can you tell me about yourself, who you are, where you live, how you got into tech, that sort of thing?
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. So my name is Greg Greenlee. I'm located in Cincinnati, Ohio, in the United States of America. I'm a systems engineer. I work for a local data center here in Cincinnati, where we do a variant of things from cloud computing, building out private clouds for customers. We do email hosting, web hosting. I'm one of a few on the team, so I pretty much get to touch everything from firewalls to switches to Linux to, you know, cloud and everything. And I got into actually a funny story. I kind of had a longer journey to get into tech than most people. I got my first computer probably when I was around 11 or 12 years old. Commodore 16, not a 64. It was a Commodore 16.
Whoa.
From way back in the days. I had it hooked up to an old 13-inch black and white TV, and I somehow stumbled across a book on basic programming that my mother had, which I have no idea why she had it, because she wasn't into computers back then, and she wasn't a programmer, but she somehow had this book in her library for some reason, and kind of picked that up and learned a few things. And so I had my computer for maybe about a year, and I was doing some, you know, silly 11, 12 year old things like creating. Me and my brother, we were heavily into G.I. Joe, the character G.I. Joe, and the cartoon series here. So I was like creating this really rudimentary database of G.I. Joe characters and doing silly stuff like that. And I programmed the computer to be like an alarm clock for me. It was just something that that seemed cool to do at the time. What I would do is I would really just calculate the number of seconds before I had to wake up in the morning, and then like at the end of the countdown, I would turn my TV all the way up. So at the end of the countdown, there was a I can't remember exactly, but there was some module that allowed you
beep or
to,
something, wasn't it?
yeah, beep
Beep
or
9 or
make,
something.
yeah, exactly. And it just, man. And so I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. So I did that, and so it was, small little things like that. So anyhow, at one time, my computer didn't start up one day. And if anybody remembers the Commodores back then, it was really, unless you had all the peripherals like a floppy drive to attach, or a modem or anything like that, all it really was just the keyboard, and everything was contained within that keyboard. And you hooked that up. It had some outputs on the back where you hooked that up to. I think it was it allowed me to hook it up to like a dongle to attach it to the back of a television.
Yeah,
Uh,
exactly.
so yeah, so so it went on a fritz, didn't work, and me being the inquisitive 11-year-old, 12-year-old, and wanted to take everything apart, I took it apart, and inside of it was this kind of cylindrical fuse. And I was like, oh, maybe it's the fuse. So I didn't have a fuse laying around, so I actually took the fuse and wrapped it up in aluminum
Chewing
foil.
gum foil. Yeah, I knew you
Yeah.
were going with that.
Yeah, probably wasn't it worked for a little while. Probably wasn't the best thing to do long term, but it worked. I had my computer back up and running, and all of a sudden it went out completely, and we couldn't take it back because I voided the warranty by
Open it up,
unscrewing
yeah.
it and opening it up, and my father was pretty upset about that. And so after that, I kind of dabbled in computers a little bit. Back then, this was in the early 80s. So, high schools and elementary schools and things like that, they didn't have computers in the classroom. And so I wasn't able to continue my computer endeavors. I wasn't able to continue that in high school or anything like that. We had one computer class in what we call junior high school, and that's seventh, eighth grade, or eighth or ninth grade, or something like that. And that was it. And then after that, I really didn't touch computers for a very, very long time. I did a lot of other odd jobs and got into a bunch of other stuff, but came back probably 10, or no longer than that, about 13, 14 years ago, when I really got back into it, and started out doing just tech support. And I could tell, even when I was away from it, I could tell that I still loved it, I still liked it, and had that passion for it and wanted to return to it. I just didn't know when and how. And I actually started working at a computer retail store, and just selling, peripherals and selling cables and things like that. And we had a big book section, so that really brought my interest back to the forefront of for computers. And just got a few books, started reading, started taking computers apart, and started learning. Started with simple stuff with the A plus certification, and read all about that. Started learning about operating systems and hardware, and then started learning about networking. Started hanging around a bunch of cool people
Yeah, yeah.
At Hacker, the local 2600 chapter here in Cincinnati, and started hanging out there with a good friend of mine who introduced me to Linux. He's actually, don't know if you ever heard of the hip hop nerdcore group Dual Core.
Indeed, sir. Have indeed.
Yep. It's one of my best friends. So if you ever heard any of their music or anything like that, I'm Remy Forbes on the albums. So if you heard any of that, yeah, if you heard any of that stuff, you know, like Here to Help, Cypherpunks, you know, there's a song on his latest album called Running. That's me, because I was into music back then and did some music on my own. But he got me into Linux, started hanging around with him at the local 2600 chapter, and started attending conferences, the Ohio Linux Fest, things like that, and really just worked my way into the scene and stayed in it once I got in it. And that's how I'm here now.
Cool. So you're kind of into the tech scene around Ohio Linux.
Yep.
You've been to the Ohio Linux Fest, I presume.
Yep. Quite a few times.
We've had a few tables there from time to time. So, but can you tell us a little bit about your project now? You know, Blacks in Technology. Can you tell us a little bit about where that came from?
Yeah. So Blacks in Technology started out. But we've been in existence, blacksintechnology.net, been in existence for close to 5 years. And it's funny, it actually started from actually attending the Ohio Linux Fest a number of years ago, probably back in 2008. And I had been to a few Ohio Linux Fests, a couple of them before that. Went to there was you know some other conferences you know regionally, Nauticon, and really enjoyed the scene, really enjoyed the people, really enjoyed the talks, and it just you know being there talking, I love the culture, I love the atmosphere, the community atmosphere that was being presented or being displayed at these conferences. But my one thing was I couldn't understand why there wasn't more people of color, why there weren't more minorities at these conferences. And it wasn't a thing where I was, it wasn't a blame thing. It wasn't, you know, why aren't you guys doing more? It was, you know, these are great places to be. If you want to really learn tech, you know, if you are really passionate, why aren't we at these conferences soaking up the knowledge and making the connections, networking with people, learning? So it was really almost a call to action for community, right? Other people of color in tech. And it was, sure.
So, but looking at a lot Ohio Linux Fest, for instance, that you were at, would you have said, looking around there, that the mix of people there would be representative of the mix of people in your average, everyday, run-of-the-mill tech company?
Yes and no. Yes, in the fact that...
I'm not saying this is a good thing. I'm just asking, you know...
Yeah. So, you know, but, and let's put it like this. I went to the Ohio Linux Fest this year as well. It was a totally different feel than what it was in the past. In the past, there were a lot of people there that were, how can I put this? That didn't have the corporate look. Let's put it like that, right? And I was used to being in more of a corporate environment at that time. So the people that I run into, no, it didn't reflect what I was used to. But once I got more and more into tech, yeah, it seemed to reflect, you know, what I was used to seeing, which is, you know, largely, or majority white male population. I don't want to make this seem like it, this.
I think we need to approach this like there's a bug out there, yeah? And we need to just file the bug and say exactly what it is. What is the issue? How are we going to fix it? Yeah, it's as simple as that.
Exactly. So, but I guess what I'm trying to say is it was never a hostile environment. I was never treated in any way with any hostility. It was always inviting, but it did bother me that there wasn't more people of color in these environments, right?
So, yeah, and I think, as you say, forgive me for putting words in your mouth, you want to go and get more people from, you know, from your own culture in there to experience the, you know, cool places.
Exactly.
Like a logical thing to me. Okay, good.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly how I felt, is I want people to be able to have this opportunity and to experience what I'm experiencing right now. And that's what led me, you know, I had a conversation with another gentleman there, another black gentleman. And, you know, I was just like, you know, these are cool places. These are cool people. You know, what can we do to raise awareness for, you know, conferences like this, you know, this type of tech, this type of technology speak, I should say, within our own community, within our culture. And so I had the idea of, you know, at first it was Blacks in Technology. Was this going to be a blog? You know, I wanted to showcase and be a representation of a Black person in technology, writing about tech, you know, showing my stuff, so to speak, and being a role model, really, you know, having like a representation of, you know, people who might look into tech as a career choice, or who might just want to see, you know, what another Black person in tech is writing about or doing. And so that's what I wanted. And then we took that idea and we said, well, hey, let's create this community. And the word community really, really stuck out for me, because, you know, when you talk about community, you talk about, you know, the people inside the community, the services, the infrastructure, and, you know, all that is what makes up a community. And if you can kind of harness all that and you know, I was thinking, you know, putting that online, that would be a great thing to bring more awareness. So, you know, people who are interested in tech, and who might not, some people, you know, it's natural that, you know, people flock with people who look, talk, walk like them. It's just a natural thing. It's not a racial thing. It's just how people have you know, over the years, that's how people. Exactly. So I wanted to bring that aspect. I wanted to bring that community feel online so that people of color, you know, other minorities could come and we could congregate and we could talk about tech. And, you know, if there's some, you know, some social issues that we can tackle, or some experiences or some advice that we can help other fellow techies out there, you know, then that's great too. So, you know, that's pretty much what I did. I put together some, you know, took some open source online tools and put together this community, where it started out, you know, just being a numbering in the maybe 10, 20, 30 people, but it has grown close to 1,500 people.
Wow.
So,
pretty impressive. So what have you got on over there? You've got a podcast without an RSS feed.
Yeah.
Exactly. Link to the RSS up on the website, dude.
Yeah, okay. I'll make note of that. I thought I did. Maybe not. I'll check on that. So there's a few things that we done. We have the homepage, which is, you know, pretty much our blogs and our articles. And what I tried to do is, I, you know, one of our things, or one of our triads that we like to say is, you know, visibility, participation, perception, right? So we want to increase visibility. And that's for the people that are part of the community, We want to showcase the talents of people that are already working in the field or doing something great in the field that you might not normally see, right? So, you know, you have all these representations out there, and if you go to any tech website out there, you're going to see what people think that, you know, the representation is, which is largely white or Asian males who are doing tech, and you don't really see, you know, a lot of people of color out there. So I wanted to bring that representation. I wanted people to be able to visibly, you know, see other people who look like them, walk like them, talk like them, doing, you know, some cool things in tech. So having a blog and saying, hey, you know, let's put your picture on a site and let's, you know, if, you know, let's put your background. And so when you write these articles at the end of it, they'll see a person of color and they can, you know, say, hey, oh, I can do this then. Maybe I can start my own blog. You know, that's the whole reason behind the visibility. So the participation is just that, you know, if you increase visibility, likely, you know, increase participation. You know, when people see people they can relate to, it's more likely that they'll be able to, you know, that they'll participate as well, or if they think they'll be able to participate, right? And then the whole perception thing is works kind of both ways. It's, you know, perception within our community and perception outside of our community. And I want Blacks in Technology to be a catalyst in changing that perception. So inside the community, it's, you know, it's not a thing of where people within our community think that only white males or only Asians can be in tech. It should be something that should be attainable by anyone. And if you change that perception and if you have that visibility aspect and you can change the perception of people out there, and they're not, you know, just thinking that, you know, all they can do is this one thing, here's another option. Tech is an option for you. You know, it can be, because, you know, we have close to 1,500 members that say it can. And then from the outside, you know, it's changing perception as well, and saying, hey, you know, there's this entire community out there of people of color who are in tech. You know, now my perception changes. Now it's not just me, you know, reaching out with just within my community. Now I can reach outside and I can, you know, I understand that there are people out there, people of color that are doing great things. And, you know, when I think about who I should, you know, try to get for a conference, or who I should get to try to speak, you know, now my horizons are broadened, and Bit is hopefully a catalyst for that. So,
but the argument against that, of course, is that you know, you're going to have lower caliber. I'm just quoting here. Now. You're going to have a lower caliber of speakers just because you need to fulfill a quota. What do you say to that?
So this is not about filling a quota. That's not what it's about. It, for me, anyhow. It's broadening your scope. That's all it's about. It's broadening the scope and of talent that you try to obtain for us. So if you don't ever step outside your circle, you're going to continue to pick the same people for everything. And that's what I mean about changing perceptions. If people pick these people, you know, not that they're you know, people are great speakers, and I give them that, but if you don't broaden your reach and go out, if you don't even know about a person over here who could be an expert at this topic, I know quite a few people within our community that are experts at topics.
Yeah.
And, you know, because other people don't know about them, right? They don't reach out to try to get them to speak. You're gonna continue to, it's not lowering the caliber. It's just broadening your scope. Just looking at, you know, just taking that chance to step outside, just outside your comfort zone, and saying, hey, you know, who else is out there?
Absolutely. To be honest, the argument completely falls down because anybody who has even listened to one or two of your shows and the caliber of the people on there, I mean, black, white, whatever, the stories are excellent. The topics are interesting. The journeys
Thank
are
you.
Brilliant, and the goals are fantastic. And that these are any of these people would be more. I would be more than happy to go in and sit, or indeed on HBR, would be more than happy to get them on board. So how do I do that? If you look at, you said that you came from Ohio Linux Fest, that mm-hmm. was the catalyst. How do we now go and pull you back into these fests?
How do you go about and do what again?
You're getting you're making the connections. You've got all these nice connections here, and mm-hmm. this whole pool of people that they, you know, traditional Linux scenes or the traditional floss scenes or the traditional tech scenes
mm-hmm.
are not being exposed to. How do we get that get the flow going two ways here?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's as simple as. I was talking with a friend of mine, and you know, with Blacks in Technology, I'm an engineer at heart, right? So, a lot of the stuff that comes with running Blacks in Technology, organizational stuff, sometimes it's hard for me because I'm not a super business savvy person, and you know, a lot of the stuff is me learning and tripping over myself and finding out what I'm doing wrong and things like that. But a guy, a good friend of mine, he came to me. He said, "Look, you're a connector. That's your biggest attribute, is that you're a connector. And whenever you go places and whenever you meet people, you connect. But it's amazing the amount of connections that I actually have and the people that I've connected. So I mean, if anybody wants to get in contact with anybody, I try to really make sure that I include contact information in any of the shows or any of the show notes that I have. But if anybody wants to contact any of the people that have been presented on the podcast or who has blogged for Blacks in Technology, I mean, just shoot me an email. I'm more than happy to make these connections in order to continue dialogue. I mean, that's what's needed, because it's not a thing of, for me, it was never a thing of being exclusive, right? I didn't create Blacks in Technology in order to be in this corner by ourselves talking tech, right? This was more of a thing to include our community, and include more people of color in tech. So I just wanted, you know, I can't remember exactly who the gentleman was, but there's a gentleman out there who's really known for his thoughts on communities. I want to say it's the guy who founded InfoQ, but I can't recall. So anyhow, his thing was, you know, communities are, you know, they, and I'm paraphrasing here. So he's basically saying that the best communities are communities that are inclusive and that allows others to create communities within, inside, you know, communities, and, you know, kind of have their own group, but still interact with the larger community. And that's kind of how I feel Blacks in Technology is. It's, you know, we do have, you know, our site and our online community where we operate and we do things, but we don't do that with, you know, with saying that, you know, other people can't come and join or they can't join in a dialogue. We do it, you know, with open arms, and you know, this is a way for us to bring more awareness to our community, but we don't try to shut people out, right? So that cross-cultural
seems perfectly sensible to me. I mean, if you go to an event like FOSDEM or whatever, you're going to have
uh-huh.
Perl people sitting next to Python people. You're going to have KDE people sitting next to GNOME people. You're going to have Fedora people sitting next to Debian people. This is just bringing more hackers into the community. Well,
exactly.
How can that be a bad thing?
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Excellent, fantastic. Because I mean, there was you know, the first time you hear about Blacks in Technology, you're going to think to yourself, well, you know, is that a them and us thing? But if you approach it from the point of view of, you know, the code is out there. It's a sort of open source ethos. Yeah, we're going to get more people in. This is a friendly place where, you know, young kids can get involved. So how are you doing? Like, I think the underlying problem that I'm trying to get at here is a bigger issue here. There's not enough women in technology. There's not enough ethnic minorities in technology. You know, technology does not reflect normal society out there, whatever normal society is, I guess. But how do we fix that?
So, I mean,
you know, and a lot of you know, that's a shit question. Sorry.
No. I mean, yeah, that's tough.
I mean, step one is you're already doing it. You're making it an accessible place for other people to look at G guys. But you know,
that's one way. I mean, there's, you know, early education, right? Early exposure in, you know, in people's lives. It's really
there's mentoring a lot, people, I guess.
Mentoring. I mean,
you were talking about that on your last episode. It was
exactly
very good topic.
There's a lot of ways that we can start to help, you know, and start to make change. I always go back to, you know, kind of our core with Blacks in Technology, and I think one of the biggest things that's going to affect change is to be visible. No matter what, you know, to me, like, none of this, and unless there's visibility for the people that are in tech, for instance, if I go and I go and speak at a high school where there's a lot of underrepresented people there, you know, urban setting or anything like that, to me that speaks more. That's actually a bigger impact than it is just to have a computer class at that high school. It because it's,
I know exactly where you're coming from. Yeah,
and I'll give you a short story about my wife's cousin went to one of the top high schools in the United States of America, right? That's located here in Cincinnati. And he at first wanted to get into computers, and he we had this conversation some years ago, but he told me he walked into the class and, you know, everybody in the class was white and the teacher was white, and they turned around and looked at him and everything like that, and he just got this weird feeling that he didn't belong. Now, I'm not saying that that's the correct attitude to have. What I'm saying is that's a real attitude, right? That's you know, I don't deal with, you know, with how it should be. I deal with how it is. And how it is is that person goes into that classroom and he instantly feels uncomfortable or like he's not wanted there. And he turned around and walked out. And I just thought that was quite telling, you know, as far as how a lot of people might feel going into tech, women included. I talk with quite a few women online, you know, Black women who are in tech, and you know, it's the same recurring story, you know, you know, as far as how they feel being in an all male environment and being the only female. It's intimidating. And that's just, you know, that's just how people feel. And so I think visibility goes a lot further than just having a computer class or a computer course in your high school. What does that mean? That that can still lead to the same problems that we have, that the white kids in the high school attend that class and nobody else does, right?
I'm with you,
I think visibility, you know, goes a long way, and I think that's one of the biggest things that we have to tackle. Exposure in the media, as far as when it comes to tech, speaking at conferences.
Yeah. If you look at any of the movies, like your stereotypical hacker is the white faced guy in his mom's basement is invariably a white guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that perception, you know, that perception has to change. And that's one of the things I feel that could help if we could just get more exposure, if we can just become more visible. But it's almost like a catch-22. You go to these conferences and you might go once and you might not see any people of color. It might discourage you. You might not go back. And what does that do for the next person? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's this endless kind of cycle. Beyond that, I think that there is an onus on some of the conference organizers to step outside of their circle, and reach out and say, hey, who else is out there that we can get that can speak intelligently about these topics that we have, it's crazy. But we have to be accessible as well. There's a responsibility that lies on us as well, as Black people in tech. We have to understand that we're needed out there too, and that we can't hold ourselves back and not participate, right? So yeah. there's also a responsibility on us as well. So when these people are having these call for papers, call for proposals or whatever, we have to be willing to step up to the plate too and submit papers and not feel intimidated or not feel, I think there is a type of inferiority complex for some people, and it might keep them from submitting a paper. And some of that is just education. Some of that is just saying, everybody feels like that at first, before
everybody has
speak.
To do their first show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go in here with a massive big plug for HBR. If you have anybody who thinks that they are, they would like to present it at one of these things, HBR is a great way to do that. Talking to my own participants, there's no barrier to entry. Nobody knows, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. I have no clue as to the ethnic or racial or religious or whatever views of anybody behind the microphone. And if you're in any way concerned about, your speaking voice or whatever, we have people who will do scripts for you. So
nice.
All you need to do is I'll send you on the FTP details. Just pass that on to whoever and they can do a show on any topic that's of interest to hackers.
Nice.
And then you get your first show out of the way, and after that, it's all plain sailing. You'll be speaking to the multitudes of TED Talks and all the rest.
Yeah, so, it's a very, very huge problem to tackle. I just hope that, Plaques and Technology is doing its part, and trying to tackle this huge issue.
But what do you say to those poor those guys out there who think, okay, well, we're going to have all these women taking our jobs and we're going to have all these ethnic minorities coming in taking our jobs?
Yeah, so if that's the way some people think, that's kind of how they think. But if you really need to look at it as so once you start including more people, right, new ideas are going to come out of that.
Yeah.
New ways of doing things are going to come out of that. It shouldn't cut jobs at all. It should create jobs. Right.
Absolutely.
And if you're scared of that.
Exactly.
You're scared of innovation.
It was a crappy question anyway, because we're desperately trying to get engineers all the time. And one cool thing that I saw that you guys do is you post you post job advertisements on your network, and I think that's a brilliant way to go. brilliant way to go. And I've I've been very fortunate in working in companies that have had, been diverse, been quite diverse. The company I'm in now is quite diverse. And it just makes a much more interesting environment, even from the choice of music that people play in there, that you get exposed to, even the stories and the humor that people have and the different approaches people have to solving problems. It's better all round, you know? So I think it's pretty cool. What you're doing is really, really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, good friend of mine. Her name is Ayuri Selassie. She's she's based out in Silicon Valley. She's huge on, or what she calls these cross-cultural, experiences and sharing knowledge, across boundaries and being exposed to other people's culture and how that affects and how that improves the overall environment. Period. Knowledge wise that improves it, innovation wise that improves it. I think having a diverse workforce is not going to, I think that can only help, it can only help to increase jobs in the long run.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. I mean, some of the, you have this the founder series, where you tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do there.
We've done the podcast really ever since Blacks in Technology was founded, and it's just really a push to try to give some exposure to minority tech founders and let them tell their story and like I said, give them some visibility so that the whole perception thing, that young people who are listening to these stories can envision themselves as being founders. And I like it because it gives it, it lets them tell their story from their point of view and some of the pitfalls that they've had and some of the things that they had to deal with and some of their experiences. We started it because one of the people on the Bit team, her name is Jewel Sparks. She deals with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of founders, and you'll hear this thing, in Silicon Valley, we can't find, any black entrepreneurs, or we can't find any, black people who founded tech startups. And so we wanted that to be a thing where, like, here's, we're doing interviews with tech startups.
Look over here.
And that's what that's what I mean by, broadening your scope. There are minority tech founders out there. You just kind of have to open your ears and your eyes to it and really reach out there and to find it, because there's people out there that want to tell their stories. There's people out there that want that exposure. They want to be seen. They want to be heard. And so we just offer them a platform to be able to do that.
And some of the shows that I've seen, there've been one or two. Sorry, some of the shows that I've heard, there've been one or two that have been specifically, catered to, hairdressing needs of.
Now you listen to a lot of them.
Well, I listen to a lot. I have a big long commute, and I have to fill it with something. Nice. But others are, it could be just somebody that you picked off the alma mater. How do you call that list? Someone you picked off a list from Harvard, and it's like, I did my degree in chemistry, and I did this, and I went on to work there in a Fortune company. Just diverse range, but this is a cool thing. It's bringing hackers on to exposing us to more hackers, which is always a good thing.
I agree. I mean, I like that, the Blacks in Technology is giving them that platform that they might not have had before. And that's what I mean as far as like the, what you see in the media and across all media platforms, whether or not it's the internet or whether or not it's, television, there was a show that was on television, I think called Silicon Valley, and all the participants in that on that show were all white. And so, you know, this is I love that, you know, Blacks in Technology has that platform to give people, and you know, they're not from traditional, I guess, the traditional backgrounds that you're normally accustomed to. You know, they didn't, of them, you know, didn't go to Harvard, they didn't go to Stanford or MIT or anything like that. They might have just, you know, come from a community college, or they might have just, you know, come from a historically black college or university. But they have a brilliant idea or a really good idea and a really innovative idea, and they're out there pursuing it. And those are the types of stories that, you know, that we love to cover.
Yeah, and I think my point is, you know, they're just interesting stories from the point of view. They're interesting stories. It could be really anybody telling those stories.
Yeah.
How did say, for example, if there was shows or stuff going on, do you like arrange meetups or anything at Fest, or Birds of a Feather sessions with people at Fest?
We've had a few events, not a ton, and that's something that I'm looking towards doing more of this upcoming year. Is doing more meetups, getting more, I guess, you know, feet on the ground, because a lot of the stuff that we do is online. There's been a few events here and there, but not as many as I would really like to, you know, in the upcoming year, really like to get out there more in the schools and the colleges and really bring Blacks in Technology to people on the ground and, you know, do a lot of, you know, meetups and, you know, a lot of, you know, different talks or things like that in the future. And hopefully I'll be able to do that. It's kind of hard, you know, being that, you know, I'm based out of Cincinnati, a lot of the, which, you know, is kind of far away from some of the, you know, major cities. And so, but that's what I hope to do is to try to do more in-person events.
Have you gone to Ohio Linux Fest or places like that locally to give talks?
No, I haven't. I did, however, I took both of my sons to Ohio Linux Fest this year. That was pretty cool.
Very good.
I've given talks locally here. I haven't given one, and that's another thing that, you know, I want to do. It's one of my goals for this year is to do more talks. You know, locally or, you know, wherever I can, really, really put myself out there and do more talks in the technology sector, not just diversity talks, either. So I like it. And I think that the conversation needs to be had the conversation about diversity always needs to be had. But I like to do more straight technical talks. Recently I gave a talk about at a local meetup about monitoring your infrastructure using open source tools, and you know, I just covered some of the tools out there that, you know, I use day to day, like Nagios, like I use the Elk Stack, Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana for logging. And some other tools, Cacti, things like that, and went through a bunch of those tools with the local meetup group here. And I like that. You know, I like that. I like that exposure. I like that does to perceptions. And so that's, you know, I'm looking forward to doing more of that this year.
Yeah, please send, if you have any of those talks, you can, or you want to record some of those for shows for HBR, please feel free to send them in.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well, it's open to anybody. the only discrimination we have here is you have to be a hacker, and I have yet not to find one. So we're doing our best.
Nice.
Cool stuff. So, is there anything that I missed? You have some children. What ages are they? And how do you get them into technology? kicking and
screaming. Yeah, that's so I have a so I have a 21-year-old daughter, and I have a 2-year-old. Yeah, I started all the way over. I got
back to the nappies. I couldn't do it again.
Yeah. And I have a 5-year-old son, a 2-year-old son, and a 21-year-old daughter. And actually my daughter is quite the musician. She went to a local school for creative and performing arts here in Cincinnati, Ohio. So she's very, very musically inclined, but she also codes Tumblr pages for people, which I didn't know for a long time until she told me that's what she did. And so she's actually, you know, going to school for web and graphic design. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
I kind of, you know, she was going to school at first for music, and not that I, you know, she's, it's really hard to, it's really hard to get a job if you, quite honestly, if yeah. you're, if you're majoring in music, right? And so, you know, I kind of explained to her, like, you know, if you want to do something, you know, you love coding Tumblr pages for your friends and things like that, and you do really well with graphics, that's a really good avenue to pursue, and you can get a job, of course, after you
easy
get out of college.
Lemon squeezy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, she went that route. You know, music will always be a big part of her life, and she'll always pursue it. But you know, as far as, you know, paying tuition and everything like that to come out of college with a degree that you really can't do anything with, you know, I just thought it made more sense for her to do something else. So that's what she's doing. And then my two sons, like I said earlier, I actually just took them to their first tech conference, which was the Ohio Linux Fest, which was pretty cool, because like I said before, I'd been going for quite a number of years. And just to be able to, you know, take your sons to an event and a tech event and, you know, them, you know, really like it. And although I wish it seemed Ohio Linux Fest seems kind of scaled back now. It doesn't seem nearly as big as it used to be, which was a little disheartening. But, you know, they got exposed nonetheless. I got a few pictures actually with them. Messing around with the one laptop per child device. You know, just seeing, you know, daddy on a computer, you know, four big computer monitors in front of him and always, you know, messing with something electronic, or they always, you know, they ask what I do for one. And I tell them, you know, I'm an engineer, and, you know, they love it. They actually say that's what they want to do. Oh, I want to be an engineer. I want to be an engineer. You know, I want to build stuff. So, you know, that all goes back to, again, that visibility and that perception that changes it right there. You know, I know it's within my own household.
Yeah,
but
I know. Yeah,
that's huge. You know, now I've got kids who dream of being, you know, an engineer, and knowing that they can do it because they see their father doing it. And so that's a huge thing. And so, you know, it's funny. The 2-year-old, they can handle electronic devices. They're always on my mobile phone. They're playing games on it. My 5-year-old just got into Minecraft. There's this game out there called Surfer something, that Subway Surfer or something like that. And my 2-year-old is just like incredible with it. I mean, his hand-eye coordination, the first few times I played it a few times, and I'm just like, I can't get the hang of this game. And he's just sitting there on my phone, just, you know, just swiping his finger, you know, doing the jumps and all that stuff. And I'm just like, that's pretty cool. You know, it's a different age, you know, as far as, you know, exactly. The children and everything. But they see, you know, the motherboards I have laying around, the Raspberry Pi I have laying around, or asking questions. And that's really what it's about, that visibility, that early exposure. And like I said, that perception that they can envision themselves doing it and saying that I want to be an engineer is great. So
Yeah. I have two daughters myself, and whether they end up being engineers or not is really up to them. But
yeah,
the point is, I want the avenue to be there for them. And, you know, thankfully, exactly. I work with several female engineers in work. So it's, I'm working with, you know, the name of the engineers, and it comes up in conversation, and, you know, they're required to take stuff apart, just like my son is, you know. So
yeah,
if that's the path that they want to go down, good and well. If it's not, then also good and well. So yeah,
exactly. You know, I always like to say it's all about, you know, having that option, and, you know, hopefully that's what we're exposing them to, is just, you know, they don't have to, like you said, they don't have to go in technology or, you know, any of the STEM fields at all, you know, but just them knowing that it's an option for them is enough.
Yeah, and spreading the word as well, that, you know, to yeah. their, you know, boyfriends and whatever, you know, friends that they're playing with. No, it's not. Girls can be engineers too if they want, or, you know, whoever wants. Why would that stop you being an engineer? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Well, we're pushing an hour here, so we don't have any limit on time. So if there's anything you want, you can fire off, or we can continue talking, or if there's anything else you want to cover.
No, can I give out our URLs for the site and all that stuff?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So it's www.blacksintechnology.net is the website URL. You can catch us on Twitter, and that's at Black in Technology, and that's BLKTECHNOLOGY. We also have a LinkedIn group. So you can, you know, subscribe to us by going to our site. There's a subscribe button on the right-hand side there. Or you can reach out to us, you know, for anything, really. If, you know, if you want to talk or you want to know more about our organization, contact us at blacksintechnology.net.
And is that just limited to persons of the Black persuasion, or is it open
no.
to
anyone? You can join no matter what. It's you know, when I just like to say that, you know, our focus is to help increase diversity in technology, right? Help bring that awareness to people within our community. I'm never, ever going to turn anybody away of any persuasion at all. That's not what we're about. And so I don't want anybody out there to get that impression that, you know, this is a Blacks only organization, and that, you know, either, you know, on either side, whether or not you want to be a member, or, you know, you want to, you know, to come to the BIT team and offer, you know, Blacks in Technology something on that end. We're not going to turn you away. Like I said, it's all about cross-cultural experiences and this cross-cultural exchange. If you can bring something to the community that's going to inform our community, inform our users and our member base, that's great. And, you know, that's what, you know, that and if you look at some of our upcoming podcasts, some of our previous podcasts, I had Nigel Kirsten on there. He's a from Puppet Labs. He's the VP of I think he's the VP of technology or the CTO of technology or something like that for Puppet Labs. He's a white male. I had him on the Blacks in Technology podcast. I had Mary Scotton. She's from Salesforce. We were talking about diversity at tech conferences. I've had Alex Miller from the Strange Loop Conference on there. I've got Jordan Sissel, the creator of Logstash, and now he's over at Elasticsearch, coming up on a podcast in a couple of weeks. This is not about, you know, like I said earlier, this is not about being exclusive. I want these people to come in also and share their knowledge with our community, because our community can benefit from their knowledge. And if we can benefit, you can help us benefit from that, then, you know, that's great. And that's what we're looking for.
Perfect. That's actually what I wanted to hear. How about, well, how would your stand be if people started filing bugs on conferences or on projects that they weren't being represented enough?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Like, you know, the famous Ubuntu 0 bug that there was too much Windows in the world. You know, perhaps, how would you feel about reopening some bugs over on Ubuntu that there wasn't enough diversity in the Ubuntu community? You think that'd be productive or counterproductive?
Oh, filing a bug saying that there's... if it needs to be exposed, it needs to be exposed. So I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, that would be cause a stir.
Yeah,
some the tech press something to talk about. Okay, listen. Hopefully, I'll be hearing some of your future shows. I will definitely be hearing some of your own shows on the podcast. But hopefully, you'll be sending us in some HBR content here. We'd really love to have it. And again, spread the word if there's any young people or whatever who are interested in tech. Send it over here, and nobody knows you're a cat. So
excellent.
Yeah, cool. Thanks very much for taking the time, and I'll post this up. It should be available. I can't see the date, but okay, folks. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.